WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello, Irish fans. You're listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports. I'm Mike Brammer, and on my left is Mike Sullivan, and even further left than him is his brother Ed Sullivan. But luckily, we won't be talking politics today because there are much better things going on in this world, and that is the Fighting Irish program. Not just football, albeit basketball is making the case for itself as well. So let's start with what we are, and that is a football school. Recruiting day was yesterday, and I have to admit, to Ed's pessimistic view, again, he wins with another prediction. And
pessimism
that is,
wins out.
The fact of the matter is that 2 months ago you said when we were number one, by far, we would not end up there. And Rivals.com has it, you know, number nine. A couple other ones have us even higher than that. Is that really something to be worried about? I mean, is that a problem for us that we didn't finish number one?
No, not at all. Mike wants to jump in here, I know, and say something negative about me, but we're not going to let him yet. I don't think it's a problem where we ended up. There's a lot of folks that have us at two. ESPN or somebody has us at like nine, I think. But the point is, year in and year out, Charlie has been in the top 10. This is his third recruiting year that he's been in the top 10, and that's where we need to be. I actually think that we probably will never be the number one recruiting class. I think when you look at the standards that we have to have academically, there's just too many kids that we would have to just eliminate from contention. So when you start with the fact that some people are eliminated, and now we rise up as high as, you know, two, or anywhere in the top 10, that says what a fantastic job that Charlie and his staff are doing in terms of recruiting. As long as we're consistently among the leaders, then we're fine. We don't need to be numero uno. Mike, would you like to say something?
Yeah, Ed, first, let me start by saying, we're two in Rivals, two in Scout, and if not for the Omar Hunter defection, we're number one, or if we pick up maybe the Knox kid out of California, we're number one. So the main point is, does it really matter if you're number one or not? No.
I don't think so.
But to speak to your pessimism, of course we can be number one. We're an eyelash away from being number one, and Alabama gets the number one recruiting ranking because they brought in something ridiculous like 35 kids. Our average per, you know, star rating per kid is the leading total in the country. So you could really make a case to say that we brought in the best class in the country. They brought in more of the other kids to round out that class. And on the first day of fall camp, how many of those 35 kids for Alabama are going to report? A bunch of them will be non-qualifiers. So I think you can make the case that we did have the number one recruiting class in the country. But so therefore, I take exception with, oh, we can't ever have that, you know, your pessimistic view. But the bottom line is, where you're accurate, it doesn't really matter as long as you are consistently a top 10 type class, which we've done in the Weiss era so far, 3 for 3.
Yeah, the thing that I don't like about it is you never know what's going on in a coach's mind, and particularly Charlie Weiss's in this case. When you're going after recruiting kids, you're fitting the bill for your program. You're going after guys that you want to fit that. And I think the kid Goodman is a perfect example of that. I mean, he is a top-notch athlete that not a lot of people know about. I think he's a great catch for us, and yet he's ranked, you know, well below what I think he should be. I mean, that's one problem. But the other problem I'd like to point out is that Notre Dame had 10 of the top 150 guys, okay? 10, and I think that was the highest out of all the classes. Last year, we had 10 out of the top 150. So this is the second year in a row that we've had two recruiting classes of 10 of the top 150s. I mean, right there are 20 players. Who cares about the rest of the 10 that you got when you're stacking the deck with those 10 to begin with?
Well, so it's just all about, you know, increasing the odds that the more top-quality kids you bring in, the better odds you have that they're going to turn into be players. Some of them will be busts. Some of these top 150 or top 100 kids that you referred to will be busts. We know that.
And some of them are going to leave. And not every kid is going to show up and bleed blue and gold a year from now. That's just the reality. It's the intense media attention on this that we're now contributing to that is so, to me, it's just unbelievable from where we were, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, that makes everybody feel like some 18-year-old kid who changes his mind at the last minute is now, you know, a missile shot right at the heart of your program. That's ridiculous. There's going to be ups and downs in this, We're fueling the program with high-level talent now, and that's what we need to do, and now we need to do something with it once they get in. But don't get all bent out of joint on every single up-and-down kid who decides not to come or who comes and decides he wants to be back with his girlfriend next year.
Now the pundits said, hey, look, Notre Dame has got to finish strong. You know, it's a key thing that they haven't done in years past. We did get the kid out of Texas. The one that we added, who's a great catch for us. I mean, other than that, again, I still think that's overdoing it, you know, overanalyzing this whole recruiting process. The fact of the matter is we got 23 solid kids, exactly what Weiss is after. And, you know, when you're doing that, you can't argue but think that who cares where they rank us.
The focus shifts now to development of talent, not bringing it in.
We have a lot of time to talk about that, but let's revel in this class for a little bit longer. I mean, the accomplishment of Weiss and the coaching staff to hold this class together is unbelievable in this atmosphere, in the current environment of recruiting where anything goes virtually and guys are being hounded even after they make their commitments and so forth. For us to keep this class together after 3-9, to me, that gives me a lot of confidence about Weiss as the right guy who knows how to set a goal out there and develop a plan and follow through and achieve it and get his staff to buy into it and do the same.
A huge part of coaching at this level, we've talked about this before with the last two staffs, by the way, a huge part of it is, are you an organizational person? Are you a leader of a program? You know, there's a guy who, when he's on the field, he's got the whistle and he's barking at the kids and making sure that they're running the drills and being tough. That's a certain aspect of a coach. There's a guy who stands on the sidelines and says, push this button now, push that button, do this, do that, X and O. That's a certain aspect of a coach. Yep. But you need somebody who knows how to, who needs to be the general and organize the forces and go somewhere with it, and this is what he's done.
Yeah, one of the things that I like seeing in the South Bend Tribune, you know, they listed all the recruits. They asked him a series of questions, and one of the questions asked of all the recruits was, what was your impression of Weiss? And the top two answers coming from that was, number one, competitive. I mean, he's absolutely a competitive guy. And number two, honest. And I thought that rings true with this whole class as a whole, and that says a lot about how Weiss approached this. Very direct and upfront and honest and straightforward with these kids right from the get-go. And that obviously is going to bode well for us down the road.
You know, without getting into each kid and what we like about each player and, you know, buying into all the hype of high school stats, what I really like about this class is that a year ago, Weiss got burned by a couple kids who decommitted late, identified a problem, said, here's how we're going to address that problem. He stuck to it, and the results speak for themselves. That gives me hope that he'll take the same approach, looking back on this 3-9 campaign, be able to identify, here's what we did wrong, here's how we're going to fix it, go do it. He seems like he's the guy, kind of guy that can learn from, we all know that he's not an experienced college head coach, but his ability to identify problems and find solutions and learn, you know, learn from those mistakes, recruiting, he certainly showed that he can do that, and I think he can do it on the field too.
Well, that was his MO when he came out of the pros, was this is a guy who has an incredible learning curve, and when he sets his mind to attacking a problem, he gets a solution. So this is consistent with that.
Yeah, not to rain on your parade, Ed, but you did predict some defections as well, and that did not happen. So that has to be.
Yeah, let's. Be
I don't
clear
think I remember that.
You did.
Let's
you
be
did.
Clear about this.
I don't remember that.
Prediction is only technically correct that we weren't number one by a fraction based on some technicalities because Alabama brings in, you know, 10 guys that are going to end up in a junior college, okay? But the essence of what you predicted, you were wrong, pal. You were wrong.
Oh, boy. Is that... twist that around. Final point on this class. One of the things that excites me a little bit is the identity that they've formed among themselves as a class already, that they have gone through the fire, so to speak. There was a lot of people looking at them, expecting them to defect because of the 3-9. They didn't. They talked to each other. They formed some. It reminds me, Mike, a little bit, your state championship team who played as grade school kids together and were talking about going to high school together and playing. You know, they had that vision from very young, and they formed a bond. When these guys go through and are juniors and seniors and leaders of this team, it's exciting if they can hang together
it
like
is,
that.
It is, and we'll see how they handle now that they're no longer being courted.
Right.
Now it's more like, okay, first day at Marine boot camp.
Right.
We got you to sign on the dotted line. Now here's your drill instructor.
That's right. Your ass is mine now, big guy.
All right, let's do this. Let's switch over to basketball. I mean, we are a football school, but you got to hand it to Bray. He's making a case that this may be a basketball school. He took his first ranking of the season going out to Seton Hall, which Seton Hall is no pushover. I mean, that's a team that beat Louisville. That's a team that beat Providence. I mean, there are some athletes on this team. And he literally took it and handed it to them right from the get-go. I was completely impressed. I was totally going into this game with a little bit of apprehension that, oh, my God, that's one game we can't afford to lose. I don't even want this to be close. And there was no doubt about it right from the get-go.
As I recall, that you were poised to just let Bray have it had this game not gone the way you thought it should have.
But he did. He kept my point was, if they score more than 70 points, we're in trouble. They didn't. The thing that I didn't anticipate was not only were we going to hold them to less than 70, but we were going to outscore them by putting 95 points
on
the
board. Well, Seton Hall scored a lot of points this year. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is a team that has offensive firepower.
Second in the Big East in scoring behind us. I mean, I think looking at this, and Bray made some comments in the paper prior to the game that, hey, we're going to have to outscore them. And I know a lot of people, when they hear Coach talk like that, it makes their skin crawl. I think he's a realist, and he looks and says, hey, we score a lot, they score a lot. It's going to be a high-scoring game.
Both Charlie and Mike, I think, have are hurt sometimes by the fact that they're honest. They're maybe too honest. Mike Bray is going to – he's a great interview. He tells it like it is. He's going to speak his mind and say things like that. And sometimes Irish fans, they have – everybody has in their mind, like, the perfect quote they want that signals who we are as Notre Dame and that we're not – come on. Let the guy – give a good interview.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, you know, everybody likes to come back and harp on Bray about the comment he made about Notre Dame, you know, not being a tournament team year in and year out. And I think that was taken a little bit out of context. At the time that he said it, the program was going through a situation where it was that way. I mean, how can you say that we're expected to be a year in and year out tournament team when for, I think, 10 years straight, we didn't even make the tournament? After he came in, after McLeod and so forth. So, yeah, I agree with you. People kind of pinprick and decide, let me take that quote and I'm gonna ram that one home. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, this clearly was a huge game. We're ranked for the first time. He goes out there, blows them out in a great, I mean, we really played great basketball.
A complete effort. I mean, really our most complete game of the year offensively. Just a clinic. I mean, we just torched Seton Hall. It was unbelievable. And then defensively, created a lot of points with great defense, created turnovers and got into transition, held them under 70, and they scored a bunch of points in junk time, too. I mean, I thought we really put the clamps down on Seton Hall.
Well, let's talk about our boy, the beast of the Big East, Luke Herangode.
Well, I tell you, the announcers last night, Bob Picozzi and I can't remember who the other guy was, but they were just amazed. They were in awe of what Herangode did. And you look back on... He scores in a dizzying variety of ways. It's amazing. You can't say, well, this is his shot. He's got it all.
When he has, especially when he's got like that little turnaround fadeaway going, he is almost unstoppable because he can bang inside hard. And if you try and cut that off, now he just floats away from you and tosses that thing up. It is tough. I think one of the things that makes him real successful, first of all, in the off season. This guy worked hard, really hard. He's come in lean and chiseled, and he gets up and down the court. He's learned all these different shots. I mean, he's made himself an offensive basketball player. That combined with, I think there is not great defense played on the post sort of around the country. I think that's a skill that you just don't see much of. People know how to bang and all that, but there's not a lot of good defense played across the country anymore. I think people don't emphasize as much. Kids are coming out of AAU programs where all the emphasis is, go show you can score. And so Herangode steps up and learns to be this offensive threat in all these different ways possible, and there's nobody can stop him.
Yeah, I think that the nice thing is that at least he's now getting the respect that he deserves, and they made several references to him last night as being the front runner in Player of the Year in the Big East, and I think he is. I mean, he literally is the runaway right now. You know, whether or not he keeps this up, I personally think he will, and I think the reason he's gonna is because the other four guys on the court are playing that well when guys like Zeller coming in the game and shoot 2-for-4 from three-point range. When Ayers is coming in and getting 9-10 points off the bench, Hilslin is now averaging a little better than what he's been in 7 points, 9 points. Jackson is now putting in 7-9. Now you're talking, all right, can we get McElhinney and Heron Goody to put up, 20 and 15 respectively?
It's funny though, you forget the forgotten man here, Mr. Consistent, Rob Kurz, right?
Yeah.
He's our best third scoring option, and people forget about him because you're right, though. Heron Goody is having such a monster year right now, and with Marquette coming up in a couple days, team that he really dominated first time around, he should have another huge game against them. Now, it will be tough at Connecticut.
Let's go back to Marquette for a minute. What do we need to do differently? Not to have Heron Goody have a big game, but to be successful against them, and the problem is not so much offensively for us as defense.
Well, their three guards give us some matchup problems. They're a nightmare matchup, we'll see what coach comes up with. But for one, we're going to play better defensively because we're at home, right? I mean, don't you guys think home court gives you a little edge defensively?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm curious as to your take on this, but think of it in this way, and not that I'm going to want to predict a loss here, but supposing that Notre Dame loses to Marquette in a pretty decent game after winning impressively on the road. I mean, what happens to us? Do we then get the bigger knock than we should?
I think we stay in the polls.
Okay, good. Yeah, and that's my take as of the way we're playing.
We're blown out like we did before.
But even still, I mean, I think that, the way we've been playing lately, we're 7-2 in the Big East. We've proven ourselves in some big games. I mean, we are a top 25 legitimate team right now, and there's no doubt about that. And my argument would be we should have been there a week earlier. We shouldn't have been there just now. It should have been a week earlier.
I think the performance last night in New York, a lot of media exposure, I think we're going to start getting the benefit of the doubt. I agree, we can't get blown out at home to Marquette, and I don't think we're going to. I mean, I would expect us to be able to win that game. Back to Ed, your question on how we do it. It's going to start on the defensive side of the ball and how we try to match up. I bet you Bray's going to give them several different looks, change defenses, try to disrupt them, get them out of their rhythm. But, you got to rebound to keep them. We got to be efficient on offense to keep their transition game from getting out ahead of us. If we're shooting the ball well, they have less opportunity to run. If we're rebounding, we have more opportunity to run.
Yeah, quick pull-ups. Probably aren't going to be the thing that works for us. We need to run some offense, slow the game down a little bit, get it inside. Those even missed shots inside tend to not create break opportunities. It's like, coming down, firing away a three, a big long rebound, goodbye. So I would look to see us a little more deliberate in our half court, maybe.
I don't know. That's an interesting question, given that this team plays the best when they're free and loose and sort of have no fear, as Coach West.
Everyone has the green.
Yeah, you got to admit that our confidence right now, as far as shooting the basketball, is way up. It was almost at a season low when we were at Marquette and lost that game. I mean, that was not a good outing for us. We had multiple digit turnovers. Jackson wasn't that good. He didn't have a very good game. I would expect we're going to shoot the ball, number one, a little bit better. And I think that in your home court, when you've won 33 in a row, I can't imagine we're not going to step it up defensively and really get after this game in front of a large crowd, national audience, and so forth. All right, that's going to do it for us. We're going to wrap it up. We'll be back after the Marquette game this Saturday, hopefully with another Irish victory, and extend that to 34 games. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. If you have any questions or comments, send us an email, info@domeanddomer, or post it on the website, domeanddomer.com. For Mike Sullivan and Ed Sullivan, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks again for listening.